Now, I am going to transport you for a few minutes to a future in which some of the biggest problems of food production might be more or less solved. For the last 3 days, there's been a conference in Dublin examining zoonotic diseases like avian flu, swine flu, COVID-19, the ones that can cross from animals to humans. One of the speakers at the conference, Professor Alison van Inenam from the University of California, UC Davis, spoke about the state of research which genetically alters livestock to remove or to reduce their susceptibility to all manner of diseases, things like TB, BVD, some of the biggest heartaches in farming, all potentially eradicated or at least controlled under a microscope rather than on the farm. And Professor van Inenam joins me in studio this morning at the end of that European Veterinary Immunology Workshop in Dublin. Good morning to you, Professor. Thanks for coming in to us. Big picture question to begin. What does the world look like 10 or 20 years from now if there is widespread adoption of this technology?
Yeah, thanks, Philip. I think what we're talking about here is using genetics to introduce useful characteristics into our livestock populations, and particularly with an emphasis on things like disease resistance. And this is done using a tool called genome editing, which enables scientists to basically tweak the genome of animals to make them not susceptible to disease.
Now, that is not without controversy, which we will come to, but let's look at the upsides first. Are we talking about controlling, reducing, or are we talking about potentially eradicating diseases?
Well, in some cases, we're looking at approaches where we would actually render the animals no longer susceptible to a virus. So the virus's entry point, where it actually gains access to the animal, would no longer be present in that animal. And that offers an opportunity to actually produce animals that are resistant to that particular virus.
What are you doing here? Are you knocking out the gene that makes them susceptible, or are you introducing new genes, or both?
Well, could be both, but the ones that are closest to market, I guess, are actually inactivating genes, where basically you've got a protein that is being expressed by the animal, and that is the target that the virus gains access to the animal. And so using genome editing, you can in a very targeted way go in and inactivate a component of that protein so that that entry side is just no longer present in the animal. And that's the opportunity that's offered.
Let's hone in on some of the specific diseases then. Bovine viral diarrhea costs the industry in this country over 100 million euro last year. What has been achieved there? What is possible?
So there was a paper that came out last year where scientists in the US have been able to tweak a gene. It's called CD46 for those that are really interested, which is again where BVD virus gains access to the animal. And by tweaking that naturally occurring gene in the animal, they're actually able to produce a variant that's no longer susceptible to BVD. And they've actually challenged the animal that's been edited in that way.
When you say challenge, you mean expose them to the virus?
Yeah, expose them to the virus along with a control animal that hadn't had the edit. And in fact, the animal that had the edit was not getting the virus, whereas the control animal was. And it's a small sample size.
Small sample size, so it's early days. What's the timeline? Assuming that there isn't regulatory pushback and assuming that everybody was to go and adopt this technology, what's the timeline on something like that actually taking hold in the marketplace?
Yeah, well, I think that's what's exciting to scientists is because we can go in and tweak the genome of an animal, we can actually tweak the genome for the next generation. And that offers the opportunity to, for example, do an edit and then the animal would be virus resistant. Now, to get it taken up in the industry amongst all the dairy cows, for example, obviously that would take some time to get industry adoption and to get that disseminated. But it really does speed up the ability to make these targeted changes.
5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, well, it depends a little bit on the species we're talking about. Let's talk cattle, for example. So let's just say I have an animal that's going to be gestated for 9 months. So if I edit an embryo today, that'll be born.
So there's a kind of a 3-year turnaround before that cow is giving birth herself.
Exactly, in the case of cattle. So that's a 3-year generation interval.
Okay. I can't tell you how many programs we have done on TB and how much heartache it causes in this country. What is possible there?
Well, again, there's research at the development stage, in this case in China, where they've been able to introduce edits that enable animals to be less susceptible to tuberculosis. And so it's another opportunity to potentially use this technology to address that disease.
Less susceptible. We're not talking about getting rid of, just reducing an animal's susceptibility.
Yeah, and it's a little nuanced answer because it depends a little bit on the application we're talking about. In this case, the scientists exposed the animals, and the way it's worded is that they're less susceptible than actually resistant. Other examples, like the PRRS-resistant pigs, where you've inactivated a gene and that receptor's no longer there, those pigs are actually resistant to that virus.
Okay. Now, that's the good news, but there are going to be people listening to this who think this is just genetic modification and we don't like that in this part of the world. First things first, this is not transgenic mutation, is it? You're not taking the DNA out of a pig and putting it into a cow.
You're right. And yeah, there's a long history of the GM discussion. But yeah, that's traditional kind of genetic engineering, which has been around for about 30 years. And that traditionally did involve bringing in genetics potentially from another species into the animal. And in this case, what we're often doing is tweaking the naturally occurring genetic variation in the animal. So inactivating their own gene or protein so that they no longer have that virus.
So in a sense, you're really doing nothing different than if you were to introduce a number of bulls of different breeds into a field of cows and let them just go at it themselves.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, perhaps it's not well understood that natural genetic variation is the very basis of our livestock breeding programs. That's how we select better producing dairy cows, for example. And it's the basis of all animal breeding, the millions of genetic variations that exist between different animals. And really, this is working to introduce a useful trait in a very targeted way and then complement our conventional breeding programs.
Nonetheless, there will always be fears of unintended consequences here. How confident are you that there is going to be no impact on the food that these animals produce, on the milk and the meat?
Yeah, and always ask a scientist to give you a confident answer. But I think what we're talking about here is we're working with a naturally occurring genetic variation, like we're introducing disease resistance. We wouldn't expect that to have an effect on the milk or meat. And in fact, our lab has done research looking at animals we edited to not grow horns, so polled animals, and the milk and meat composition wasn't changed, as you would expect, because we already eat animals that don't grow horns, Angus, for example. And so we don't expect this to have a food safety aspect or alter the composition. Okay. We're just targeting the trait.
So it doesn't change, or hasn't in that particular experiment changed the milk or the meat. But we do know, don't we, that a single gene does not just find expression in a single trait in an animal. It can govern a number of different things. So if you change the susceptibility to tuberculosis, you might be changing other things that you haven't identified.
Yeah, that's called pleiotropy, where you have an effect of multiple effects of a gene. And that's certainly in animal breeding programs, we're always looking for negative correlations. So, for example, if you select for yield, you'll often have a bad effect on reproduction. And so you want to keep an eye on both and make sure you're not having a bad effect on other traits of economic importance in your breeding programs.
But ultimately, because you haven't been able to conduct an experiment where you produce these animals for generations and generations, you can't offer 100% guarantees, can you?
You can't. And the long-term safety guarantee is actually a scientific impossibility. You can't prove a negative. What you can do is get data and have a look at the animal's performance and the characteristics of that animal and under disease challenge and collect as much data as you can. But it's difficult for scientists to give you an absolute safety guarantee, because you can't guarantee safety of anything.
The difficulty here might be that, you know, this technology exists, the genie is out of the bottle, if you like, and is going to be implemented. Do you see, if we were to get the heebie-jeebies about this in Europe, do you see the possibility that we're going to have two different markets in the world? One would be a disease-free or disease-reduced gene-edited market, and then the other would be a disease-prone non-gene-edited market.
Yes, that's happening. So there's a disease-resistant pig, a PRRS, that's porcine reproductive respiratory syndrome virus disease.
Very serious disease in the pig industry.
And there's a company, Genus, that's publicly traded here in the UK, that is developing a disease-resistant line that will be used in countries that have regulatory regimes that allow that to come to market, like Brazil and China and Argentina. But they're going to continue to produce pigs for the European market that will be susceptible to that disease. And so that's already happening, potentially.
We are, aren't we, then, in effect, having some kind of influence or control in those other markets by saying, we're not going to allow you to sell those products in this part of the world?
I think that's a bit of a pessimistic take. I don't think that the European Commission has made their final determination as to how they're going to actually regulate this technology. So there have been some earlier decisions suggesting they might regulate it all as we did with genetic engineering. But there's also a move, and certainly many scientists supporting an approach that if you could have achieved that same edit using conventional breeding, that it shouldn't be treated differently to conventional breeding. And so if that does go through, then there's the potential that we could introduce things like PRRS resistance without having the GM stigma.
Finally, though, while there are concerns here, there's an upside, a very big upside for animal welfare, for human health, for wildlife welfare, if we don't have to cull as many badgers any longer, for farmer welfare, for environmental welfare.
Well, I mean, I would argue disease resistance really ticks the three pillars of sustainability. So it's better for the animals, better for the farmers, and better for the environment, because you don't have animals getting sick and needed to be treated with antibiotics. So it's kind of a triple win.
Indeed. Professor Alison van Inenam, thank you very much for joining us this morning.